Welcome to Gold Star Classroom, the podcast where our panelists go back to school. We'll grade them on their answers to a variety of general knowledge and trivia questions. They don't know what we're going to ask, and we don't know what they're going to say. The student with the highest grade at the end of the class will win the coveted classroom prize, the Golden Banana. I'm your host and headmaster, Professor Jerry Jaffe.
Welcome to today's episode of Gold Star Classroom. I'm your host and headmaster, Dr. Jerry Jaffe, and I'm excited to bring you today's episode from Tokyo, Japan.
Yay!
Woo!
It's my pleasure to introduce today's very special guest students. Sitting on my right, writer and host of the podcast Talking Valiant, Adam Shaw.
Hello. Yay.
Hello, Adam.
Nice to be here.
Thank you. Thanks for coming and doing this. And sitting on my left is a man who, with a world population of over 6 billion, ranks as the number one least sports fan.
It's true.
Jeff Gettert.
It's true. There's just no particular interest there.
I've always suspected that about you.
It's true.
It is true. And sitting directly across from me is a gardener, sandwich deliverer, and set designer based in Tokyo, Japan, Jeremy Plant.
Hello.
Hello, Jeremy. How are you, sir?
Very good.
And so you should be. And so you should be.
You say sand wedge like it is in the golf club?
Sandwich.
Sorry.
That's okay. Minus 5 points for correcting the teacher.
Good start.
Yes. And so, as always, I will be asking you, my students, questions across the breadth and width of human learning. And as any good teacher would do, I'll be grading your answers.
Okay.
Okay. Are you gentlemen ready for your first quiz question?
Yes, sir.
Ready.
I think so.
I have a topic that is from the world of marine biology, and it's something I know you've all heard about, but fish. I wonder what you actually know about. How often, I'll start by phrasing this as a simple statistic and see where it leads us. How often do you suppose dolphins save people?
How often? Like,
yes.
Per year?
You could phrase your answer in the form of a per-year answer.
Save people as in taking them to Jesus?
Well, I got an answer because since we're in Japan. I bet dolphins save people more often than Japanese people slaughter them.
That would have to be a pretty huge number.
I know there's somewhere down in Brazil, I think they, for like 100 or 200 years, the fishermen go out, they throw the nets out, and then the dolphins chase fish. Schools of fish into the nets, and then the fishermen throw fish to the dolphins. So they work together. So I'm guessing dolphins, for the most part, like people.
Well, we've often heard, like as anecdotal or as urban legend, that there are stories of dolphins saving people, either mm-hmm. drowning people, lost people, or occasionally even people being attacked by sharks. Those are the kind of stories that we hear. But I was trying to wonder, either statistically or as a big fan of actual science, scientifically, how often do dolphins actually intervene and rescue people in crises? What kind of statistics or other facts are out there about this scenario?
When you say crises, this has got to mean drowning, essentially. There's no other...
Well, there are three common crises that are brought up in these stories. Drowning, shark attacks, and lost at sea.
Ooh.
You will hear stories about dolphins coming to the aid of people. In these types of circumstances.
8 times a year.
Okay. We have an answer.
There's no logic behind that.
Yes, but I'm going to give you 10 points for positing an answer.
Yay.
So at least we're moving forward a little bit.
I don't know. I would say if dolphins are intelligent, then 100% of the time when they encounter somebody in this kind of trouble, if they're smart enough to know what's going on, they're going to... help that person.
Well, dolphins, porpoises, and whales, you said if they're intelligent, are all considered intelligent. They're part of the same family.
But I mean, so are humans, but there are some that are
less helpful than others. Less likely to save you.
I think it was this year in India, it's illegal to use dolphins for entertainment purposes. They've been classified as non-human people in India.
I saw that, yeah.
Huh.
So they are now, they're
no
too
sea
smart.
World.
No Sea World right. in India, which is cool.
It's
they still have the bottom people that are
yes.
untouchables. but dolphins,
says
right?
The man dolphins, with his dolphin on his hat.
Yes, I do have a Miami Dolphins hat. So
Do you know there's like a collective biological word for whales, dolphins, and porpoises?
Have you ever heard? Yeah. Sea mammals.
Yeah, no, but it does start with the syllabic s.
Snakes.
Cetaceans?
Cetaceans. 10 more points. Nice. Well done, Adam. Adam is in the house. Cetaceans, the word cetacean comes from an old Greek word, which meant, do you know the root word for cetacean? Is an old Greek word that means...
This is spelled like C-E-T-A?
C-E-T-A, correct.
Ceta. Cetas.
That's, that comes from the Greek word large sea creature. That means large sea creature. And of course, sometimes the words whale and dolphin and even porpoise are used interchangeably.
In Japanese, yeah, kujira, I think, can represent dolphins as well, right? Hmm.
I don't know. Aren't they iruka?
Iruka.
Iruka is the...
Kujira, though.
Yeah.
As like a category, maybe.
Yeah.
Huh. In English, famously, killer whales are referred to as whales, although they're actually a type of dolphin. Mm-hmm. And there are some 37 species of dolphins. You know the difference between a dolphin and a porpoise?
It's the nose.
Yeah, the nose.
The nose shape is part of it, which Jeremy said first. So 10 points for the nose. Nose shape is part of it.
The length of the body or the...
Yeah, porpoises.
The fins, something about the double dorsal or no?
Well, the porpoises are generally a little shorter and chubbier, and they do have different shaped dorsal fins. That is correct.
They've got all the same fins, just different dimensions.
Yeah, the dorsal fin, the one on the back, is shaped differently. Hmm. It's shaped
some
differently.
Some don't have... I don't know if beluga whales are considered dolphins or whales, but I don't think they have... They don't have a...
Well, not all whales do not typically have dorsal fins.
Right, okay. Never mind. Yeah.
I'm not prepared to say categorically that none of them do, but typically they do not have dorsal fins, which the dolphins and porpoises do. They are all considered intelligent, as Jeremy said, and also something, Adam, you alluded to a couple minutes ago. They are social animals that are known to just generally be helpful. Mm-hmm. They come to each other's aid. They come to the aid of other cetaceans. They will help other dolphins, porpoises, and whales even when they're in trouble. There have been cases of them helping each other. Hmm. They also raise their young. So they're very protective and nurturing of their babies.
But killer whales will kill whales, won't they?
Killer whales are...
They must have done something to deserve that.
They
drown blue whales. They can hold their breath longer than blue whales, mm-hmm. and a pack of them will push a blue whale down until it drowns and then eat it.
They have different... Their pods, they have different accents. That's one reason, in SeaWorld, when you mix them up, there's a documentary called Blackfish that came out. Mm-hmm. When they mix them up, they're not all speaking the same language, dialect. Uh-huh. They live in these pods for... The matriarchs live 60 to 80 years or whatever. I think there's one they've documented 100 years old.
I'm going to give you an extra 10 points just for using the word pod. Pod is the collective word for a family or group of dolphins or whales that live together. I will say another one of the differences between dolphins and porpoises is that porpoises don't make any whistling noises like dolphins or whales do. It's conjectured that their blowholes have a slightly different structure. If there are any porpoise enthusiasts out there, I'll say my reading on this is that it might be an open subject, but generally scientists think that porpoises do not make whistling noises, and they're trying to figure out why. Hmm. Now, I do have human-dolphin encounters, which is the question that we actually started with.
Oh, yeah.
Now, there are three types of categories that humans and dolphins encounters are put into. And they each have their own circumstances.
Hostile takeovers.
Hostile takeovers, vulture dolphins. And the first is in this category. It's called the lone dolphin. Sometimes... We usually think of dolphins as in pods or planes, but
sometimes you're just driving down the highway and there's this one random dolphin who steps in to lend a hand.
And indeed, one publication by a dolphin cetacean scientist, documented Gesundheit. 29 human lone dolphin encounters. So this is not anecdotal, per se, information or urban legend information. This scientist has documented 29 human lone dolphin encounters. One third of these encounters included one similar activity that happened. Either anyone swimming. Know or guess?
Circling the person.
They did all involve swimming. That's 100%.
Yay.
There was no mention of circling behavior, so I can't affirm or deny that suggestion. But there is one thing which the scientist reports happened at least one third of the time. The dolphin attempted to hump the person.
I've heard that dolphins are the only other mammal that rapes.
Yeah,
they've raped other like men, dolphins.
Yeah, not all of.
Yeah, I've heard this.
They will isolate or even drag off a person deeper out to sea, and at least a third of these 29 lone dolphin encounters involved aggressive, unwanted sexual advances.
Wow. Well. If they're classified as non-human people in India, there are crappy people in the world. So there's got to be crappy dolphins, right? There's crappy humans. There's gonna be crappy dolphins. So two-thirds of dolphins are nice. And
two-thirds is another statistic. The scientist reports that two-thirds of these 29 lone dolphin statistics involve not necessarily sexual but overtly aggressive behavior, where the humans have been injured, like broken ribs or bitings or things like that.
Wow.
None of these 29 documented cases involved a human being saved by a dolphin.
Really?
Yep.
So the dolphins are unhappy about SeaWorld, is what's going on.
Was there actual penetration?
That's a reasonable question, and I'm not aware of the answer to that. The scientist, though being blunt in what he was talking about, did not go into that much anatomical detail.
I mean, if this happened like hundreds of years ago, it might have been where the mermaid myth
right? Could be. Maybe. The aggressive humping behaviors, many, although not all the victims, were women. And in some of the cases, if there were male humans in the water, the dolphins chased the males away first.
Really?
According to this article.
So what about with the sharks? Do the dolphins ever chase sharks away from people?
I want to say there were two other categories in this particular scholarly article about human-dolphin interactions. I'll just tell you, those two categories are called provisioned and habituated. And provisioned dolphins are dolphins that are completely in the wild, but they're used to humans feeding them. So there are some like tourist areas where they'll go out and people will feed them fish. And then habituated is referring to the areas where they have, like, swim with the dolphins.
Okay.
So where the dolphins dolphins are never domesticated. They're always wild animals. Mm-hmm. The provisioned dolphins seem to only really show interest in humans because they are hand-feeding them. There's no other greatly exhibited, playful behaviors with that category. And there are still a lot of injuries. Humans get bitten or poked or knocked around sometimes with these dolphin encounters.
As a result of aggressive behavior on behalf of the dolphin?
Not as aggressive as the lone dolphin behavior, but just in the natural course of feeding a wild animal. Biting or thrashing around going on. Mm-hmm. And then habituated dolphins, they are wild dolphins, but they're more used to having human swimmers around. And in some places, it specifically mentions Hawaii on my list. It does not mention India at all. It's some places it's now illegal to swim with wild dolphins. And that's partially because of the ethical issues, but it's also partially because it turns out it's dangerous. People should not be swimming with wild animals. Now,
on a Saturday night anyway.
I do want to wrap this up with just a couple more observations. One is, in the scientific survey of human-dolphin encounters, there were no properly documented instances of humans being helped by dolphins. if you were going to be like very strict and narrow-minded about how you interpret this question, the answer might be zero.
Wow.
But that's not to say it doesn't happen at all. The problem is that when you try to study this phenomenon scientifically, you encounter a bunch of problems very quickly. Mm-hmm. Like, first of all, it's very anecdotal.
That's all I need to know. I'm staying away from the dolphins now.
And not only is it anecdotal, but it's anecdotal about people who are in life-threatening situations, like people who are drowning or being attacked by sharks. So you have memory issues, just like in psychology.
I just don't like the ocean, so I think I'm pretty cool.
You should be safe.
Yep.
If you avoid the ocean and SeaWorld.
Yeah.
I did come across two quick quips, which I just want to throw out there, unless you have questions or comments about this dolphin issue. One is, another marine biologist has put this quote out. This is, comes from Kathleen Dzinski, who's a research supervisor for the Dolphin Communication Project. And she's known for telling people, you never hear from the people that the dolphins didn't save.
Oh, fair enough.
So there's like another problem with the anecdotal nature of these stories.
Right.
And the other is, I think this researcher included this story just to show how anecdotal it is. One of the small South Pacific islands, that's like an island nation, Kiribati, there is a report of a fisherman who was saved by a shark. Huh. And he claims he was lost at sea for 3 months, and a shark nudged his boat and swam in a certain direction. And when the fisherman took his boat in that direction, there was a ship that could save him.
I think he just was drinking too much seawater. Oh, he probably just bumped his boat and swam off, and he was like, oh, the...
Well, it could well be, but that's also why the guy included the story in his article, because he was trying to show how hard it is to use anecdotal information to make...
Right.
Yeah.
Like, a person got is claiming he was saved by a shark. How do you account for, you know, he was at sea for 3 months, he's delirious. He has associated a shark's presence with his being saved.
Anything starts to look like a dolphin or a shark after enough days at sea, probably.
And in Japan, they say that the nail that sticks up gets pounded down. But in America, we like to praise our students. And I have in my hand here a list of 101 random ways to praise a student, which I'm now going to praise you guys. You guys are precious. All right. So, having praised you for your performance on the first quiz question.
And our preciousness.
And your preciousness. I'd like to ask you a quick question, if you will, on this phrase. And I saved this topic specifically for my opportunity to have a class in Tokyo. I'm going to start with an easy question, and then there's a couple follow-up questions that might be a little harder.
Uh-oh.
What country is known by the nickname Land of the Rising Sun?
Japan.
Adam wins. 25,000 bonus points.
What?
But...
it's a follow-up question.
Here comes the follow-up question.
I was going to say the animals.
Where does the nickname Land of the Rising Sun originally come from?
Korea.
We have one vote for Korea.
I was going to say America. China.
We have a vote for China and a vote for America. I will say this.
It's the kanji right there.
One of you three is correct. Does anyone wish to defend their answer? Adam's kanji. Already said he thinks it's the kanji. He's already right there in front of you.
Well, the kanji. Yeah, the kanji. So I think it's, I don't know, I want to say...
I think you're right, actually. The kanji for America is like rice country or something, right?
Yeah, that's right.
But that's just because of the bay.
It's phonetic for
America.
The may becomes bay. But it's Korea because this has to do with like a long-standing dispute between Japan and Korea that might involve something about the naming of the Sea of Japan or might not. But maybe, I don't know, emissaries or envoys between them. Like the envoy from Japan would be visiting Korea and would refer to it as the Land of the Rising Sun, which implies some kind of glory, which deeply offended the Korean people. And there was much rejoicing. I don't know.
Could it have been from when the world used to be thought of it as flat? Japan was on the...
I think people knew the world was round way before Columbus.
Tell me this. How long ago does the nickname Land of the Rising Sun go back? I will say, Jeremy, that I will take America off the table. It is of Asian origin.
1500 years.
So that's how far back, or is that the year you want to say?
That's how far,
back.
Back. Maybe
1,000 years.
1300 to 1500. Yeah, we'll go real far back.
I'll say 1299.
We're going to vote for 1299.
I don't know. 1,000 plus years back, maybe.
So that puts you at around 1,000.
But English was different back then, so it would.
But
have
I'm
been
saying
that's
the translation, the Land of the Rising Sun. But mm-hmm. they could have said it in mm-hmm. Chinese or in Japanese.
So it goes back to the Sui Dynasty, around 590 Common Era or AD.
1500 years.
And it originally indicates, and interestingly, your notion about flat maps is not. It's not right, but it has a right idea inside of it. The islands of Japan are east of China. Mm-hmm. So it's the direction of the rising sun compared to China.
So and China, compared to Korea.
And also compared to Korea. But it was the Chinese who started referring to those people as like the people who come from the land that's in the direction that the sun rises.
So it sounds like my explanation for the wrong country.
Right.
Yes.
Look at the symbol. Sun. Sun yep. origin. Which
Chinese, which is still
Chinese characters.
Used now, basically. Right. For the name of Japan. Mm-hmm. Nihon mm-hmm. is those Chinese characters. Yeah. Right. All right.
That was a guess.
Now, I got bonus points worth 1,000,000 points. If anyone can get this right.
How many points did I get for the right answer about the wrong country?
I needed to use irrational numbers for that. Is this. There is one other country in the world that their national anthem refers to itself as the land of the rising sun. So ooh. It's not Japan. It's a completely different
is the national country. Anthem in English?
There's an English version of it, yes, but I will say it is not an English typically English as a first language country.
There's a country with an English language version of their national
language. Yeah, but you can make an English version of anything.
Mm-hmm. But there isn't, though.
No, but this is the proclaimed right? national anthem of this area is called Land of the Rising Sun.
It's got to be an East Coast
country. It's got to be like
country.
The Philippines or someplace where they have English.
Or New Zealand or something.
New Zealand's all English, though, right?
No. Depends what you mean by all English.
New
Zealand has three official national languages, which Maori is the second one, English is the first one. They do have a third official national language besides those two, though, also.
But the national anthem of New Zealand
would be in English.
Well, it is in English, but there's a Maori version, and there's also a version in this third language.
But you just said there's an English version of this national right. anthem, so it's probably not New Zealand.
In this case, I will affirm your suspicion that it is not New Zealand, but I will give another 25 million bonus points if somebody can tell me what the third official language of New Zealand is.
Aboriginal from Australia?
No.
High Elf.
High Elf.
You're not far, my friend, but that's not it either.
I'm not far. Klingon.
As far as I know... And again, I'll be glad to fact check this. This is the only country or the first country that sign language is an official language of the country. Mm-hmm. So English, Maori, and sign language are the three official languages of New Zealand. But to go to the other country.
Brazil.
Brazil. I'm going to go with Brazil. Can I go with Brazil too?
You
no,
can, but
Brazil,
he'll get all the credit.
Not going to have an English version of their national
points.
Anthem.
No, I was thinking
there
Brazil
still
could
be
on
a,
the East Coast
you,
down there, and they seem rather.
But what you picked up about the way he said it is that it's a national anthem that we're assuming is not originally in English,
no,
right?
But there is an English version of it,
right? But I'm
but I'm going with Jeff on that.
I'm not officially.
You can translate anything. There's probably English version of the Japanese.
There isn't
national anthem. There's probably someone's written it. It's not official, but there's a version.
It's not a top 10 hit. But.
Well, to cut to the chase,
Philippines.
It is not the Philippines. It's not Brazil. It's
Sweden.
But it's on the east coast
Sweden.
Of something.
It's Brazil.
It's on the east coast of Africa.
Ethiopia.
Madagascar.
Eritrea.
Biafra, which is part of Nigeria. And Biafra is known in the local parlance as also the land of the rising sun. And Biafra is trying to secede from Nigeria.
Oh, no.
And so in order to create a national identity, they've created this song where they emphasize their local heritage as Land of the Rising Sun.
Speaking of national anthems.
Okay.
There is one national anthem, I can't quite remember it, that mentions the country of Sweden. But it's not the Swedish national anthem. It's actually, I believe it's Poland. I think the Polish national anthem actually mentions Sweden.
In a good way or in a bad way?
In a negative way, in a contrastive way. I'm like, yeah.
All right. Well, does anyone... I have a particular Japanese phrase in mind. There is a common Japanese student nickname for the teacher's grading book.
What? There's a common Japanese
slang expression for the teacher's grade book. I would predict if we had any Japanese person under the age of 25, they would know what I meant immediately.
So something cho.
Correct, it is something cho.
Yeah, I was going to say like... not nanok cho, that's the one that...
Keiseki cho or kate cho or...
Bowing down to people who may have a better grasp of pronunciation or dialect, the word I'm thinking of is emacho.
Hmm.
Which means devil's book.
I was thinking like oni, like devil,
yes.
But I did, okay.
It's a form of devil.
Okay.
Oh. So as I'm filling out my very complicated math in my emacho, I'm going to ask you one more question, and it is a math question. I will say this is an open field question, so I'll be open-minded to any possible answers. I want to know, I'm going to start with this question. Why is pi called pi? Why do we call pi pi?
It's Greek.
It is Greek. It does come from the Greek. That is correct.
Is it like chi? Is it not really a p, is it?
Well, yeah, I mean, it's an English anglified form. It's a pi.
It's a letter, though.
It is one of the letters of the Greek alphabet.
So the question is, how did the Greek letters get their names? Like,
well, it comes from the Greek. Well, no, in this case, pi is a modern mathematical concept, and the word pi comes from an old Greek word, and that old Greek word,
Pythagorean.
No, but it is good guess. It is a math word though, so it is like a directly related word. It's not one of these like transposed.
Pythagoras was the guy who came up with this number, right?
No, but Pythagorean is triangles, isn't it?
Yeah, well, that's what he was most famous for. Was triangles.
Yeah.
Pi is to do with circles. I'm going to ask you what pi is in a second, but pi comes from the Greek word for perimeter. Pi itself, do you know what it measures, put simply?
The
ratio of the circumference into the radius.
I wish people at home could have seen the hand gestures.
Hmm.
Was just made. But yes, it is the ratio of a circle's circumference to its diameter. It is an irrational number, which means
there's no ratio like 3 to 5 for it.
Correct. Actually, that does mean it cannot be rendered in a ratio or fraction form. And when written out in numeric form, it cannot end.
Mm-hmm.
So it's irrational numbers usually continue on. It is most commonly used by children for a particular calculation. Defined
by children?
Well, you know, in your school days, you learn pi.
As you learn it. Oh,
pi r squared.
Which pi r squared is used to determine what?
The circumference of a circle.
No, that's the area of a circle.
That is the area of a circle, and also, it is also used, secondly, the circumference of a circle. And then thirdly, you can do a similar calculation with a sphere. So it's also used in calculating the volume and or surface area of a sphere.
Pi r squared is the area of the circle.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. I
forgot. Pi is also used in movies to show...
2 pi r
are
the diameter,
genius.
Right?
Yes, yeah. Correct.
It's a good movie.
So the circumference is 2 pi r, is that right?
I do not have all the formulas written out. Because actually, I was going to go in a different direction. This is the open field part of the question I promised.
Yes. Because 2 radius is 1
diameter.
Children often ask their math teachers, why am I learning this? And as it happens, pi has many, many applications in everyday math, engineering, calculations. So my open field question is, I have in front of me about 15 of the common uses for pi.
For engineers?
Yes, but I want you to be at least a little more specific. But yes, I have some engineering uses. I have some mathematical uses. I have some physics uses.
Making pizza? It's the common man's food, right?
Tires?
It is used in the design of tires.
Oh, calculating speed for the speedometer. I had the wrong size of tires put on once, so like my speedometer was actually off.
Like,
right?
Measuring a ball bearing to make sure it's perfectly spherical?
In the manufacture of ball bearings, yes. Yes, these are all uses where the pi would be used. Any other thoughts? I have like a list of these. Let's try to name some of them.
It seems like it would just all be about the construction of circles.
Well, it is used often in engineering. Anywhere a curved line is involved, there's probably pi is being used. So, for example, one of the surprising ones that I came across was that pi is used in the designing of the skin of airplanes. Like that outer shell of your airplane, it's all curved. So they have to use pi to measure its, you know, design and construction.
Okay.
So any kind of type of engineering project that even remotely involves curves, spheres, or waves. So pi can be a big part of, you know, trigonometry and sines and cosines and waves. Pi appears in all of those formulas. So anywhere else that you would use.
So if you're designing like the fuselage of a plane, like the body of a plane, you want
it's kind of
used to confirm that it's perfectly round or not?
Well, that the curve.
How do you use that number?
Well, again, we don't need to go into, nor do I am equipped to go into the detailed math, as much as we're just looking at areas, as a petulant school child might ask their teacher when they teach them pi, when am I ever going to use this?
Have you ever flown on a plane?
Right.
That's the magic of pi.
Yes.
I could just see some like snotty kid in America saying, well, I'm not going to design airplanes, so I don't need to know this.
And you can't fly on one.
I would still be happy for any American teacher who could start listing any of the uses for pi, though. I mean,
right.
That would already be a triumph for American education system.
It's surprising how many people don't understand how airplanes work.
Yes?
My friend works at NASA, so obviously he designs rockets, so he understands, but he sits on the plane and he told me, like, he was going to, because he came to Japan, he was just someone explaining to, like, their wife how the airplane works, and he was just going, like, that is not how this works.
And I
don't understand like the exact math, but I understand like the principles behind it. But it's I was just surprised. Like, and I learned this when I was like,
what do you mean
eight.
how it works? I mean, anybody who's thrown a paper airplane.
Not how an airplane works. The shape of the wing
the
air pressure and the
generates
the
lift,
which is called the Bernoulli's principle.
Okay, there you go.
Bernoulli's principle is,
how's that different from a paper airplane?
Paper airplane's gliding. There's no curve.
Well, a paper airplane is, if you make a simple child's one, is a glider.
Right.
But some people do have like a fancy origami approach where they build in like buffers so you get that Bernoulli's effect.
Right.
But airplane wing, the bottom half of it is a further distance than the top half of it.
Yeah.
And so when it cuts through air, the bottom air has to go faster than the top air to go because it's going actually a different distance.
Is it flipped? Because the top goes faster, creates the lift.
I would defer to your friend who works at NASA
rather than
put my foot in my physics mouth.
Anyways, one side is going faster.
Yeah, one side is pushing the air faster, and that has the effect of generating lift.
Yes.
Yeah.
Pi does appear in both Einstein and Newton's theories of gravity. Pi does appear in radio and TV signals because they are waves. So any measuring of radio waves, television waves, signals. There is another indirect use. Well, let me ask you this question. One more question about pi. How far back do we know that humans... We're like asking, did Pythagoras discover pi? Which he did not. It's much older than Pythagoras. That humans have known about the principle of pi or the ratio of pi.
Hmm.
How far back does our history go? What's the oldest known references to pi?
Maybe Brandon Ferris when he invented the wheel.
Don't get me started on Ferris. Yes.
2,500. Well, no, 2,500 years sounds about Pythagoras' time.
What's older than Greek? Babylonian?
It's
Babylon, correct. Ooh. The oldest known references to Pi go back to Babylon. Gold star for you.
Yay!
Nice. There you go. That's the first gold star of the class, too. I have all these extra ones in the back I haven't been given out.
Yeah, at this rate, that might be the last one as well.
So, going back to around 1900 BC are the oldest known references to Pi that have survived, anyway. Back then, the calculation for Pi was not as sophisticated, so that reference treats Pi as 3.125.
About 3.
Funnily, there is a historic document that refers to Pi as about 3.
Oh, this would be the Bible.
Correct. 10 points for Jeff.
Really? The Bible actually has math in it?
In Kings 7:23, I wrote this down in my lesson plan, hoping it would come up. There's a reference to a religious vessel, like a bowl, and it is described as 10 cubits from brim to brim and a 30 cubits round, thus making pi to be 3, if you take it literally.
Well, there you go. See, there's the Bible using science and math, but again, inaccurate.
Yes. So. Well, again, if we were to say, you know, the historic periods, several thousand years ago, people living in deserts, building tents and small buildings, probably calling pi 3 would get a lot done.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But if you want to build pyramids and aqueducts and airplanes. So the Bible refers to pi as being about 3. The Babylonians referred to it as 3.125.
And that's from a book of the Bible that was written after the Babylonians?
Might be contemporary.
Huh. Is it New or Old Testament?
That's Old Testament.
Okay.
That's from Kings. I have, of course, as an irrational number, we know we can't list pi to the end. I do, however, have the modern calculation of pi to 10 digits. Anyone want to take a stab? Jeremy's shaking his head, by the way.
5.9.
Well, we got 3.14 is correct. What'd you say after that?
5.9.
Just guessing.
3.141. I memorized it once, but I get this wrong. 3.14159263 7.
Up to the 2.6, you were right. So up to 7 digits, you were correct. And you said 5.9, but it's 1.59. 3.14159 26, which you were right. And then out to 10 digits, 5.35 for the next three numbers. 5.35.
And these people who can like spout off until they get sleepy.
Yes.
How do they do that?
Part of the way they do that, I think you'll find they're often of Asian descent and Asian language speakers. So when they memorize it in Japanese, because there's so many homophones, so different words that sound same sound.
So they can memorize it. It's not
as
like
a sentence.
They know it.
Yeah. They think of each word as like a,
I think as blocks of numbers, I think.
They're thinking of it as sentences, basically.
Oh, it's like with phone numbers in Japan, they use the, like, in the States, when they want to spell
thing.
A word, they have, they use the letters above the
san
number,
kyo,
but in Japan, they use
the
homophones for, like,
but
something,
are there
something,
people
yodo,
who
yeah, they
can like
say it for
thousands,
yes.
thousands.
Yeah.
That's all memorization.
It is,
like,
but I think it's by blocks of numbers at a time. And so each subset of numbers, you have some mnemonic device that leads you through it. Also, I wouldn't underestimate that they take the time, like they spend weeks and months and years of their life to be able to do it. So we who have not spent time to memorize it, it seems like a great feat, and it is a great feat, but there's usually, like, behind the great feat is all the effort they put into it as well. Mm-hmm. Well, it's time for me to go back to my MHO and figure out which of my students today have the best grade and award the coveted classroom prize of the Golden Banana. But before I do this, I'd like to give all three of you one more chance for extra credit in the form of any fact, factoid, trivia, or comment you'd like to elucidate the classroom with. Someone like to go first?
I would just like to say that I have never done anything that would harm a dolphin. And I like to swim in the ocean occasionally, but please, if there's a dolphin in the audience, just stay away from me.
All right, Jeff's a plea to dolphins everywhere. Poor pie and whales. Adam or Jeremy, any extra credit?
Comments? I had a thing about dolphins. We were talking about dolphins, but I forgot it. I don't know. Something that they do. It's, oh, there was a lady who lived in a house like in the 60s. They like filled it up with
dolphins,
with water, and she lived with a dolphin, and she actually had like a sexual relationship with it. She would help like relieve it.
I will tell you, I am going to be,
it's like a psychological experiment.
I'm going to be forced to fact check that, but if that turns out to be true, I will retroactively give you 10 extra points.
Yeah, she lived
in a documentary movie. Yeah.
And your own documentary.
Yep.
And Jeremy, any extra credit comments?
I don't know. I've never actually seen dolphin for sale. People say Japanese people eat it, but I don't know.
I have seen whale for sale.
Yeah,
you can go in the store and buy whale.
That Taji Village, wherever the place is, they put it in the school lunch, or they might.
They tried to,
and they banned it.
Yes, they tried to. Yeah. All, well, of course, if you've ever had tuna fish, you've probably eaten dolphin as well. All right. With that in mind, I will refer to my grade book, do some calculations. There's some irrational numbers and irrational students. But I find that although Jeremy had the least number of correct answers, he also had the least number of incorrect answers. And the sum total is the winner of today's classroom prize, the golden banana, is Jeremy Plant. Congratulations, Jeremy.
Thank you.
It remains for me, your host and headmaster, to thank you, my students, Jeff.
Yes.
Say something, Jeff. Adam.
Say something. Yes. Yes, I'm Jeff.
I'm Adam.
And Jeremy.
I'm Jeremy.
And thank you. Gold Star Classroom is written and produced by Jerry Jaffe. Our producer and engineer is Stephen Gutierrez. Original music composed and produced by Jeff Gettert. Mr. Gettert is also our assistant producer. All commentary and opinions expressed by guests of Gold Star Classroom are meant for entertainment purposes only. For Gold Star Classroom, I'm Jerry Jaffe.